When my mom talked about menopause, she called it the change, and it was all very hush-hush, as if there was something wrong about something so natural. Thank goodness with mental health awareness and actual research, we're beginning to understand the huge role hormones play in women's bodies. Being postmenopausal has its challenges, but if you're going through either perimenopause or menopause, then I suggest you try Hormone Harmony. Why? Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now here's the beauty about them. They help the body adapt to stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off today. This is SELFWORK, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At SELFWORK, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work.
And so I'm there in front of like the occupational therapist, and she's asking me questions about my life and my context and my situation and so forth. And then she asked me do you have anything to add? And I'm like, this is so surreal for me because a few months ago I was you. Mm-hmm. And now I'm like my client.
Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. I'm always looking for potential interview ideas. This wonderful woman and I met through my own TEDx coach, Brian Miller, as he'd worked with her on her TEDx as well. When I heard her message, I knew I wanted you to hear her story in her own words. Let me tell you some facts about her. Marjorie Onos is a 2021 Inspirational Speaker of the Year, an author, internationally renowned researcher, psychologist, adjunct professor at Brock University, that's in Canada. She's the chair of the Parenting and Parents with Intellectual and Developmental Disabilities Special Interest Group and a member at large of the Council of Canadians with Disabilities. But here's her story. She's also a clinical psychologist, and she developed the first program offering support for families headed by parents with intellectual disabilities in Quebec, Canada. In 2012, while at the peak of her career in parenting and disability, where she was passionate about and fought for parents with intellectual disabilities to not be judged as incapable because of that disability. But now, incredibly, she was living that story for herself. She sustained a spinal cord injury in a car accident. Mother to a 16-month-old at the time, the accident and subsequent injury gave her what's more than an interesting perspective on parenting. Dealing with her own fear, her own drive, and all the feelings in between, Marjorie tells her story of learning to mother from a wheelchair and what she learned about life in the course of doing so. With her family, she learned to be a solution finder to make her world more accessible. She's the author of Mom on Wheels, The Power of Purpose as a Parent with Paraplegia. You know, I've never had a speaker come on and talk about disabilities, and I was so pleased to find Marjorie. Her story is incredible, and I know you're going to enjoy listening. Before we get to Marjorie, let's hear from BetterHelp. BetterHelp has long been a sponsor of Self-Work, and a great one. And of the several online therapies out there, they by far have the most highly rated. In fact, I looked it up to make sure. And Forbes has BetterHelp rated more highly over both Talkspace and online therapy, the other major online providers. Now, you might be asking yourself, so why would any good clinician want to work for an online service? Let me tell you, those clinicians don't have to take care of all the business details, the paperwork, the insurance filing, the scheduling service, none of it. I myself have been approached by BetterHelp several times to join their network. And when I saw the benefits, frankly, if I hadn't already had too much on my plate, I would have joined. You can communicate through text, chat, video, or phone whatever is most convenient and works for you. And the number one problem that so many people face when considering therapy, that problem is taken care of for you. What is it? How do I find someone? The BetterHelp website asks you questions, you answer them, and then they find a therapist that fits best for you in your area. If you have one session and don't get much out of it, all you have to do is let them know and the process starts over again. It's private, professional, convenient, and affordable. These are licensed professionals, someone who's put years into their training so that they can best help you. And so much of the hassle is taken care of for you. They now have 35,000 clinicians in their network, up from 25,000. So now is your time to choose BetterHelp. And if you use this link, betterhelp.com/selfwork, you'll get 10% off your first month of sessions. It's betterhelp.com/selfwork. I promise you, good therapy helps. I know. I've been there. It helped me, and it can help you. And now I bring you Dr. Marjorie Onos. I spent the entire weekend with your book, and maybe we should tell self-work listeners how we met. We both worked with the same TEDx coach who then talked about the other one, and we got to know each other a little bit, but we've had this schedule for 4 months. So
yes.
I'm so delighted you're here. Tell self-work listeners a little bit about you.
I think the most important part of my identity would be that I'm a mom, and that I'm mom to Thomas, who is 13. And that when he was 16 months old, I was in a car accident, and I became paraplegic. So that's a big, big chunk of my, you know, story. You know, I'm a solo mom, so Thomas didn't have any other parent. And I think it's really sort of the love that I have for him that made me survive the car accident. Other identities are like, I'm a psychologist and I'm a researcher, and I use now sort of my voice of lived experience as a parent with a disability, but also like all my career was in that field, working with parents with disabilities.
That's what's a little mind blowing. I mean, I listened again to your TEDx this morning. I had listened to it before, and you know, you were such an advocate. Your specialty was moms with intellectual disabilities, I think. And yet you found yourself judging yourself at first, like you had, you know, you had fought off judging other parents that had disabilities.
Yep. I remember one moment when I was seen by the specialized clinic, mm-hmm. a clinic that was, you know, offering support to parents with disabilities.
Sure.
And so I'm there in front of like the occupational therapist, and she's asking me questions about my life and my context and my situation and so forth. And then she asked me like, so like, do you have anything to add? And I'm like, this is so surreal for me, because a few months ago I was you, mm-hmm. and now I'm like my client.
You said in your book, you said, I was my work. And so there was a real denial, and I'm going to quote you, I denied that my disability had to affect every area of my life, including work, because it was such a strong part of your identity. And I would love for you to talk about, because I'm sure we're going to have listeners, or someone's going to share this with someone they love and know, that who have been injured in some way, or have had something very unexpected and traumatic happen to them like you did. And it's what struck me, Marjorie, was the idea that it took you a while to understand the breadth of what was going to be in front of you to deal with. And it was only then that then you had what you called a breakdown or a, and you didn't talk about that a lot in the book. You just kind of name it, that it was a delayed PTSD and a depression. But I wondered for our audience, if you would talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, of course. I think after my accident, the first 5 years, I was in denial, or I was trying so much to keep the pieces of my life or my identity intact as much as possible.
Yeah.
And I held on and I held on. And then there was a big change at work, and I couldn't keep up anymore, and I couldn't pretend anymore. And I just, like, I burnt down. And it took me 4-5 years to actually feel better. And this was like, I don't know, it was just the last standing intact piece of my life, which was what my work, my career, my identity. Mm-hmm. You know, I couldn't keep up the work. So that crumbled. It was the last, you know, sort of element that crumbled. And I mean, I couldn't work, I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't pay attention. I mean, really the only thing that I could do, you know, during those 4 years was basically get up, do my mom's things, participate in Thomas's activities, but everything else was just like really dark. And I didn't have the energy to do anything else during that time. And I think, you know, for me, it was the realization that, well, I'm a mom, but I'm more than a mom, yet all the pieces of, you know, me as a person, as an adult, as a, like, you know, entity, one person, I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know how to do the things that I love, but in the same time, take care of me. I was an overproductive person.
Yeah.
When I had my accident, I mean, I had a full-time work. I was on call 7 days a week. I was teaching in 2 universities on top of that. And I was a solo mom. And I thought that's what I needed to do to continue being me. And so when, you know, like with a paraplegia, you have to be careful for sores. You have to be careful for like UTIs, so infections of all kinds. You have to be careful also because you have less energy and stamina. And so what I did is that I had, I burnt all my batteries. I used them up during those first 5 years by trying to keep it all together. And then I had nothing in my batteries. And to like reboot the whole system really had to take a lot of work, where I had to, you know, in therapy, reshift. I don't want to say reinvent, because I don't feel that that's what we need to do. Reinvention is scary. It's too big. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't taking away who I was. It was just a matter of making sure that I would take care of me, so that me can then take care of other people.
You said the first therapist, or maybe even the second one that you went to, you fired. What was that approach that was so off-putting to you that you go, hell no, I'm not going to do that?
Yeah. It's interesting because I think it's one of the approach that is the most liked, actually. So it's a humanist approach. So kind of like Carl Rogers type of, you know, please tell me what's going on in a very compassionate way. But what I didn't like is that she kept, like, she would let me talk about my losses. And so I would enter already sort of feeling bad about myself and the situation that I was in. And then she would come in and sort of say, like, tell me about what's going on. And then I would go, and then there's this loss and then this loss. And then, you know, I'll never have a partner and I'm not a good mom and my work is going to be affected at some point. And she never stopped me. So I would just spiral down.
Yeah.
Spiral and getting dark, dark, dark. So after 1 hour, I would come out and I was like more depressed than I came in. And on the second hour, I said, no, seriously, we're not doing this.
That is something that, you know, I want to say quickly that I think a better or more experienced therapist would have stopped you and said, you know, you're getting lost in this jungle of of what you can't do. And in your TED talk, in fact, you say, you know, focus on solutions. And if, I mean, you know, it's, I'm sure she wanted to support that what had happened to you was very traumatic. And I understand that. And, you know, you have to get, wait, you know, let's put some boundaries around this and only talk about this one thing today. So that you don't overwhelm a client. And I'm sorry that happened to you. I want to talk about, of course, you can talk about anything you want to talk about, but one of the things that I was so drawn to in your book was this relationship with you and your mom and you and your dad and how they were incredibly helpful, but it was also a huge fear of yours that Thomas would turn to, especially your mother, as his mother. And because she was doing maternal things that you couldn't do or you were trying to get back to be able to do. And then I want to talk about ableism. I want you to educate me and my audience about ableism because I read it and I thought, oh my goodness, I really need to understand this more. So wherever you want to go, I mean, or whatever you want to talk about, but those are two things I really want to talk about.
Let's start about my parents because they're, you know, big part of the story.
Yes, they are.
You know, when I had my accident, I was in the hospital and they were with Thomas, thank God. He wasn't in the car. And right away, it was sort of like, I didn't even have to ask them or tell them what to do. They just like, we're taking care of Thomas. You're not worrying about him. He's going to be well taken care of. We're moving into your house for the time that you are in rehabilitation, which was 6 months. It's huge when a kid is 16 months old.
Yes.
You know, like, a third like of he doesn't life. Remember me.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And so, you know, they moved in the house. They kept his routine as much as possible stable so that he would be okay. And then, you know, the first 5 days, I refused to actually see him. And after 5 days of me crying every time I was awake, my nurse in the intensive care said to my mom, you really have to remind her why she lived. And she needs to activate herself. So you need to bring Thomas to the hospital. And I had refused because I was pretty sure that Thomas would be scared.
Of course.
There was like machines everywhere. Like it's an environment that's very sterile. And I couldn't move. I couldn't move even like my arms, even though like I'm paraplegic. So, but because of the surgery in the back and, you know, like all my muscles like ache, it was just, you know, chronic pain. It was just incredible. And of course she brought him. And of course he reacted to a point that he was like climbing over my mom's shoulder to try to escape me.
Oh, my gosh, Marjorie.
And I think that was like the most traumatic for him and for me. But my mom made me a promise that day. And she said, I will bring him every single day, even if it's for 2 minutes, until he remembers who is his mom.
Remembers your voice, your, you know, just what, I mean, it will resonate, but it's different. And so I, that was so wise on her part and on your part to let her do that.
Yeah.
But
so that's what we did.
I can't even imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it saved, certainly saved, you know, my heart, and saved my relationship to Thomas. And that's what made it worse or more difficult when I came back after 6 months, because she took so good care of him. And even though, you know, he would come and see me and we would have iPad time or FaceTime in the morning or in the afternoon, you know, he was going to her. But in the same time, kids are very resilient and they're very like they're sponges. So we established a very easy way of managing it, you know, and it was basically every time he would go to her and ask her for a question, she would redirect him to me by saying, yes. I think there's somebody else that you should be asking. Who might that be?
And I didn't shame him for asking her.
No.
But just kind of made it a game like, who else should you be asking this to? Yeah, I love that approach.
Yeah. And so that's what it did. And Thomas, to this day now, I mean, he's 13, and sometimes my mom will say, oh, Thomas, like, what are you doing this afternoon? I'm going for a walk. Do you want to come? And he's like, no, I need to ask my mom. And it's funny because sometimes I'm not even with them. And he's like, no, I need to ask mom. And so I think he really like it.
That definitely got absorbed.
Yes. Yes.
All couples go through times when they feel what I call out of sync. You're seeming to be in one space and your partner is in another. It's normal. But how do you get back in sync? The newest sponsor of Self-Work, Paired, has an idea. It's an app for couples who want to strengthen their relationship, and it's founded on the simple belief that real love takes practice and a little bit of time. This is how it works. You and your partner both download the app. Then you pair together, and the app will take it from there. A few minutes a day that is focused on the two of you can make a world of difference. Whether you're just a few dates in or have been together a long time, find the time to connect with your partner and nourish your relationship. With the Paired app, it's easy and fun, and it only takes 5 minutes a day. Head to paired.com/selfwork to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription. Just head to paired, paired.com/selfwork to sign up today. What did you do with anger?
Anger for me was a big part, but it took, like, when I had, when I crumbled, I say, you know, like after 5 years, for the first two, I was in sadness all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I was just stuck in that incredible grief. And then one day after a couple of years, I started being angry and I was like, I can't believe the insurance are not like paying for this. And I have to like, you know, advocate for my rights to be able to have like an adaptive stroller. And my psychologist just like smiled and she was like, yes, we're moving forward. Like, sure. My God, you're like, now we're not like in sadness anymore. There's like engine, there's like power a little bit.
Sure.
And so it was kind of good for me to see that from her, or to be having that reflected. Because it was sort of like, oh yeah, so I'm allowed also to be angry at life, angry at, you know, public and services and insurances that are not supporting someone to whom, you know, something like that happens. And anger became my friend. It became my engine for a while. And so I befriended it.
I bet. I mean, it is motivating.
Yeah. And then I had to move away from anger too. Mm-hmm. Yes.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about as far as, I mean, because I think that anyone who has some kind of injury or disability or needs, or maybe they work three jobs and they need their parents' help or whatever it happens to be. I love the way that you talked about setting those boundaries with your mom and your dad. And that, I think that is such great information for anybody who is needing, you know, as you say, it takes a village, and this was a very special village. What did you learn from that?
In terms of setting the limits,
mm-hmm.
I learned that even though we are always and eternally our parents' children, we grow up to be our own person, mm-hmm. and that because we are our own person, then there are things that we want to do a certain way, and that might be different than how we were raised, for example. You know, there's a story that I share where I had asked my dad to come and help because Thomas was in the terrible 2 or 3 or the F and fours, some along there. He was just not listening. And he was like, not only was he not listening, he was just destroying his room. It was just like, oh, like, so I said to my dad, like, maybe you could come and, like, I don't know, you're going to do a better job at controlling and making sure that he's not hurting himself or something. And my dad got like frustrated, just like I was, because he like, Thomas was just not listening. And at one point I see my dad sort of like hit him on his tushy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh no. And that's not what we're doing in this house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like in your generation, and my dad didn't hit me when I was young. I mean, it might have happened a couple of times that I clearly remember, because that was like the French way, you know, we did we give like little slaps on the tushy for that generation. And I was like, no, this generation is not doing this. And on top of that, what I had seen is that basically Thomas was reproducing the behavior. And so he had started hitting me. And because I'm in a wheelchair, like, I was worried that he would grow up and up and, you know, and become really tall and then continue hitting me. And then when he's that tall, I can no longer do anything. So I had to do something then. So I told my dad, I said, no, this is not the kind of help I need. So please leave my house. And, you know, we had conversations after with my parents, and I made it clear that, you know, this is not happening here. This is, if that's, you know, if they feel so overwhelmed by the behavior that they too don't know what to do, then they need to clearly state it. And I'm going to take over and I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to find another solution. But we're not going there.
One of the solutions that you talked about in the book a lot was, if other kids came with you, it was understood there were different rules. There, you know, this is not like going somewhere with a mom that can walk. That situation will have its strengths and weaknesses, and mine will have its strengths and weaknesses. But the rules are different. And if you don't follow the rules, then we'll go home. So it was, because what I was listening for was, you know, you needed to help Thomas understand that y'all were a team, and a different kind of team, maybe, than really not. I mean, teamwork is kind of part of parenting, I think, but that was very strong. And now you've got him at 13. What's that like?
Actually, pretty fantastic. I always thought that teenage years would be the most difficult for me, but it's actually the easiest. I think, you know, when you do a really good job when they're younger, it makes it easier when they're teenagers. And Thomas has a personality where he's quiet. He has this love of learning, which is something that I have. It's very strong in me too. He's also like very kind. And that's something also that I think is one of my qualities. And so there's a lot of things that we do together that, you know, it's, you know, to be kind to others. And so we love doing that together. And we love learning and teaching each other. I mean, Thomas is into physics and science, which is not my strong suit. And so he'll teach me about different things. And I think he kind of liked the fact that he could teach his mom. And
sure.
And I love learning. So I'm just like, give me more. Tell me more about physics and space or whatever.
Yeah. My son's an engineer, and oh my Lord, it's like, excuse me.
Yes.
He's a great teacher though. He's a really great teacher. So that's fun. So I want to move into ableism. And I wrote something down. Let me see if I can read my handwriting. Ableism is, the core values of ableism are over time, overachievement, and accomplishment. That's what you said, or that's what I wrote down. So, and that people with disabilities need fixing. You know, there's something wrong with them that needs fixing. And so I remember when the pandemic happened and we moved into doing so much virtual therapy, I got some comments about, you know, really having people come to my office for private sessions is an ableist kind of thing. Well, sure, everybody should be able to come to my office for sessions. I mean, you know, it's, I was kind of taken aback. I'm very conscious of that. But at the same time, it was kind of in my face. And I went, you know what? Yeah, really it is. That's true.
Yeah. Ableism, I think, was like the greatest learning in all of this. I didn't even know it existed, which is pretty bad. And ableism, you know, the way I would describe it, it's that it's sort of an umbrella term for anything that is ism, sexism, racism, ageism, you know. And it includes also sort of the notion that, or the relationship that we might have with someone who has a disability. And basically it's, you know, if you're not able-bodied, and mind, you know, sane of mind, then you are less than, you know, and then you, if you're a woman, you're less than, and if you're, you know, a different culture or race, then you're less than, and so forth. So it's that, and what I hadn't realized is that I had internalized some of those concepts.
I'm sure.
And so I was hitting myself on the head, and that's what made me so sad for so long and depressed for so long, because in my head it was like, well, if you can't hold three jobs or even one, because at the time I couldn't even hold one job, then what kind of parent are you? You can't sort of like, you know, provide for your son. And then it was like, well, if you can't run and teach him how to kick a soccer ball or play hockey, like what kind of parent are you? Like, you're supposed to be super active. And when you say no to activities and you say grandma will take you there because you don't have the energy, then again, what kind of parent are you?
Right.
And so everything was like, you know, boom, boom,
judgment,
hit on the head.
Judgment.
Mm-hmm. Judgment. Exactly. And I had to sort of recognize those things. Well, you know what? Every parent at some point will say, grandma, can you take, you know, my son to an activity for a while?
Sure.
You know, that you need a break or that you need to do something else or whatnot. But, and it was sort of like normalizing all of those thoughts and realizing that, one, my disability had most of the time nothing to do with it. Often it was like through conversations with my sister who has four kids, and she would listen to me sort of talk about my difficulties as a mom, and I was blaming the disability all the time. And then she would say, you do realize that I have the same issues with like two or three of my kids. My disability has nothing to do with it. And so it was learning about what the disability was. And it was also, which was very powerful for me and empowering, realizing that my disability, you know, actually brought some strength. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, we are solution focused in my family.
Yes.
And so if you see like Thomas, who's like now, you know, with this engineering physics kind of mind, well, you know, creativity, innovation, solution focused, those are the skills that he needs. And that, you know, is it my disability that did that? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe it's sort of, you know, our life. Maybe he would have developed it, you know, all on his own. But in the same time, it's sort of like it was nourished because we had no other choice and it was our lives. And so it was sort of like, wow, this is powerful. My disability actually sort of brings out certain things, or, you know, it brings out my voice as an advocate. I, you know, just recently in the last couple of years, I've started doing research again with some partners on parents with disabilities, all kinds of disabilities, so not just intellectual disability. And I realized that all of a sudden when we write, you know, in the grant application, Marjorie is a mom with a disability, boom, we get points added up. Oh, because it's like, exactly, it's my perspective, it's my life, it's my... And so it was sort of like, wow, I thought when I had the accident that I had lost my voice and my power to advocate for parents with disabilities. And 12 years later, what I realized is that it actually made my voice stronger.
Yes.
And so, you know, we make the best
at great cost to you, but in many ways, at the same time, there are things that it deepens or it broadens or it, what would be the word, Marjorie? It gives you a certain credibility that someone like me wouldn't have. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, there is a cost to it. And there are days where the cost is like in my face and it's sort of like, you know, my body is aching or my body is not following and I have to take care of it. And that's fine. But I think it was like I needed to be able to see also the other side that, I mean, one, I can't change it.
Mm-hmm.
So might as well embrace it in some way and embrace the positive that comes with it and not just like focus on the negative of it.
So is there something that we haven't touched on or covered that you would love for Self-Work listeners to hear from you today? I mean, you ought to watch your TEDx. I mean, it's wonderful. It's got over half a million views, and it's done extremely well on TEDx. So definitely look that up, Marjorie Onus TEDx. So
I would say that to everyone, you know, sometimes we feel that our challenges can overpower us, but our ability to adapt is strong as a species. And so we need to sort of remember that, and that with the right supports and resources, we can overcome and we can, you know, make our lives better. That's certainly something that I've learned.
And it's certainly something that's going to, in many ways, make Thomas's life different and give him a perspective that so many people don't have growing up. So again, at a great cost. At the same time, you know, I think you've handled it beautifully. I mean, and with all of its angst and anger and whatever, I mean, I just hearing you talk and especially reading your book, Mom on Wheels is what it's called. It's evident how much you've tried to make your peace with what has been given you. I mean, instead of dying that day like you thought you were going to, you lived, or at least your body moves from the armpits up, and that's it. But you found your way to have some gratitude about that and to give, to continue giving to others and to try to make a difference in your world in many, many ways. So it is such an honor and a pleasure to talk with you and meet with you. Some of the stories that Marjorie told brought tears to my eyes, and I imagine to you too. I can't quite imagine what that really feels like. But as you can hear and see, she's so determined to take her message to other parents with disabilities, other parents who struggle in any way, to let them know that the struggle is more than worth it. And we need to support them. Instead of judging or staying away, we can ask, "How can I help you?" Thank you as always for being here at Self Work. You're truly a blessing. Please share this episode and any others you might think would be helpful to others. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.